Okay, we're joined in studio now by the leader of Sinn Féin, Deputy Mary Lou McDonald. Good morning to you, Deputy. Thank you very much, Greg, for your time. It's good to have you in.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Full election mode now, are you? I mean, are you going as November 29th is the date? I don't know why we're not told. It would be nice to know.
Neither do I. It's very strange, isn't it? It's very sort of, you know, smoke and mirrors. And we're working on that assumption. We're working on the assumption that the Taoiseach will go to the Áras either Thursday or perhaps Friday, more likely Thursday, and that polling day will be the 29th. But I agree with you. I think at this stage, if the objective is to keep an aura of suspense, it's kind of a diminishing returns at this stage.
I just find it kind of weird talking about it in the context of either Black Friday or the toy show. You know, I would just like to put my big boy pants
either
on.
Can I tell you, there's been quite a kickback amongst, I know, parents of younger kids around it being coinciding with the toy show. I've been told very clearly that that would be very unhelpful.
Yeah, which is the 6th.
Okay. So I think the 29th. And look, we're more than 4 years since the last election. A lot of water has gone under the bridge. A lot of the issues, the really critical issues that vexed people and caused problems in their lives, you know, in 2020 are still very much with us. In many cases, the situation, far from getting better, has in fact worsened. So we're due an election. I mean, it's time now to go to the people, stop the shadow boxing, and actually each party and each candidate to make their case.
Many feel your party got it wrong in the referendums.
Yeah.
Immigration too. People didn't know what your message was. And then in recent weeks, there's been a whole host of controversies, some more serious than others. And a lot of the time you've been on the media, and I've been listening to you on the media, and you've been discussing that stuff and also finding yourself apologising for it and having to do that in the Dáil. And I suppose then, given the slip in the polls that you've seen, and of course the only poll that matters is polling
day,
the last time out too, things didn't turn out as everyone expected, all right? But at any point over the last while, publicly or even privately, have you questioned if you're the right person to lead Sinn Féin? Because obviously you're very loyal to the party, right? You've seen everything that's going on. But have you doubted yourself at any point that, I wonder, you know, you saw the bump Fine Gael got with a late change of leadership. Did you say, is there a right thing for me to do here with the party? Or are you so convinced that you're the right person that that didn't cross your mind?
Well, look, It's always my job to do not just what's the right thing for the party, but what's the right thing, more importantly, for the people that we represent. And the right thing all round is to have ourselves in the best possible shape now heading into this election. And, you know, when you're a leader of any organisation, but particularly a political party, you can't just be the leader through the good times or the easy times or the times when you're flying and everything's going your way. You also have to lead through the difficult times when things don't go your way. And you also have to be the person to acknowledge when mistakes have been made. And I mean, over the last number of weeks, there have been endless hours and hours of broadcast conversations, acres of print media around different incidents that arose within Sinn Féin. And I don't have an issue, obviously, with legitimate questions being put to us. We have to be transparent. We also have to be honest. And I have endeavoured to be all of that to ensure that the party, where things are challenging, that we respond in a correct manner. And I'm satisfied that that is the case. And I'm also conscious, Greg, that really for the wider public, the bigger question, and of course they look at us as an organisation, they need some reassurance from me, but the bigger issue is, you know, how will you lead more generally? What are you offering that will actually change our lives? Can I just say on the referendum, because you asked me about that.
Yeah. Well, I threw it in there. But
yeah, no,
ahead.
You threw it in. No, okay. You threw it in for a reason.
Yeah.
And the fact is that we called that wrong. It was for all the right reasons, but we made the wrong call. But here's the important thing. People will see and hear from us, especially in the course of this campaign. Not so much, you know, the old thing of the cliche, lessons will be learned. Mm. But more importantly, lessons have been learned. So you will see coming from us in terms of carers, in terms of citizens with disabilities or disabled people, you will see an ambitious, thoughtful agenda of investment, including an end to the means test for the carer's allowance, including the biggest investment, not just in disability services and supports, but capacity for people with disabilities to live their lives as full and equal independent citizens. You will see us come forward with that, because the message from the referendum was half measures, however well-intentioned, will not cut it. And you know what? The people were right. And that message has landed with us.
Yeah.
I'm happy to talk about immigration too, if we have time.
No, we will talk about that. Yeah. That's no problem. But I just wonder, if you get the little things wrong, like the statement that was made in relation to the senator, you know, not having a system in place that people realise that if you work for a party and you work in PR, you shouldn't be given. Letters of recommendation to someone facing the most heinous of charges, right? Those little things. So whilst I take your point saying that, you know, we need to focus on the big things, I think a lot of people say, well, if you continue to get those little things wrong, the obvious things, I can't believe no one said, look at this gentleman, may be suffering from his mental health. He's stepping down. Okay, what he did was not illegal, but maybe it was morally wrong. We don't need a glowing goodbye speech. I just find it hard between your comms and all the teams that you have, and right up to yourself, that no one flagged and said, well, that's not the right thing to do here. We can let this slide. And I think if things, little things like that, are not spotted by your huge team. Go ahead.
Let me make this point. You see, even in that scenario, we got the big things right.
Mm.
So the most important thing when that came to, and we have to be careful to say, in this case, nothing criminal happened, but it was inappropriate behaviour. The most important big thing that we called immediately was a referral to the PSNI and to social services. Because you see, when all is said and done and when all the noise subsides, Greg, that's how you action child protection and safeguarding. It's a function of the statutory authorities, the police and social services. That happened. The second important big thing that we got right was consequences for bad behaviour. So the person in question, their political career ended, their membership of the party ended. Those are important, and those are the big things that you absolutely have to get right. It's also, and I have to say this because there has been a focus on us, which is fine, but just remember, go and interrogate other organisations, including political ones, and ask,
with that in mind,
are there consequences in other organisations? I think you'll find they don't quite measure up on the big things.
Well, that leads me into the next question.
Sure.
In that, you know, there is a sense that, like, your health, the big launch on health, I struggled to find it, to be honest with you, right? A great deal of scrutiny over the housing policy. Not the same level of scrutiny I seem to see from, you know, of government announcements. Sure. And I'm completely impartial here, but I have to call it as I see it. Are we moving towards sort of an American model of media? Do you feel that sections of, if not much of, the mainstream media don't give Sinn Féin a fair hearing? That the default position is Sinn Féin is bad, and we have to get your gotcha questions, and we have to unravel what they're saying, but we don't get the same level of scrutiny for government politicians, when there's clearly an agreement in place in RT, for an example, to have access to a minister a day. Now, I don't know what you have to do to get that, right? Mm-hmm. But that's clearly there. But Sinn Féin, come on. And I don't have it right, but there's piles of paper here. How can we trip Mary Lou McDonald up for the headline, right? Is there unfair treatment of Sinn Féin in the national media?
Well, let me just make a couple of points on that. Firstly, I think there is a real danger that the public conversation becomes about kind of peripheral issues. I'm not going to say trivial issues, but peripheral issues rather than the actual things.
Oh, I'm going to get into the core affected stuff, right?
I'm not laying this critique at your feet, because I know when you talk to people out on the ground, a lot of times the big controversy or the big conversation across the media isn't really the thing that's bothering them, isn't really the thing that they're worried about, isn't really the thing that they want accountability on. On the editorial stances of some of the really big players in the Irish media, they actually make no bones about the fact that their editorial stance is not alone critical of Sinn Féin, but anti-Sinn Féin. Remember, take the print media. There are certain newspapers that editorialised in favour of the execution of the 1916 leaders. Now, when that's where your mindset is, they haven't changed their mind in more than a century to kind of see the good sense of Irish Republican politics. And in, they're very clear on that. I think it's different when it comes to public service broadcaster to the national broadcaster. I think there has to be scrupulous fairness. And I will simply,
is it there?
I will simply say that I would invite people to make up their own mind
well,
on that.
With that in mind, then, what do you attribute that to if people make up their own mind? I'm reading between the lines here. I mean, obviously, there's a very interesting funding structure here, for an example.
There is, yeah.
Whereby, despite all the controversy at RTE, a blank cheque effectively for €750 million was signed. Like 60, 20? I can't remember what it is for independent media. Does that sway the coverage? Would you change that?
Well, we want the model to change in as much as we believe that we need to get rid of the licence. That's old. It's ancient. It's a dinosaur on the landscape. It has to be directly funded. But we do have to have a conversation around the proportions of funding and how it's fairly allocated. You need to have, you know, multiple viewpoints in any democratic system to keep us all right. This isn't about me arguing for anyone, much less ourselves, to get an easier ride or so. We shouldn't. We should be held to rigorous accountability, and so should everybody else. And there is, sometimes it's been remarked to me that some of the media outlets are very, very hot on holding the opposition to account, which is great. But you have to, the government ultimately make decisions. They hold the purse strings. They have to be held to account. And can I also say, and your listeners will appreciate this mostly because they are your listeners and you have a very wide reach, that the whole role of regional and local media is so, so important. Because even leave questions that might arise around partiality or impartiality aside, unless you have a really, really healthy network of media, those local stories, those regional stories and experiences are never going to make it necessary to the centre or to the top of the pile.
Yeah, I know from sitting in this seat, it's actually more difficult to be biased than it is to be impartial. It actually takes more effort. It's harder.
Yeah.
Right, well, okay, that's the...
I'll take that
It genuinely is. It's so easy
and
to
just
be,
to be clear, I'm not, because I'm also conscious you could listen to somebody in political life and say, it would be an absolute cop-out for anybody to say, poor us, it's just all bias and all. That's not
the
case.
Well, I asked the question. I asked the question because I don't get a ton of access. And I was just curious because I actually see myself mostly as a radio listener, right? And I just don't want a situation whereby CNN is pro-Kamala and Fox is pro-Donald
Trump. No, I agree
with
you there.
I don't see any benefit in that and I don't enjoy watching it.
I agree.
But on to the more serious things now. You're meeting with families affected by the Chrysler tragedy later. I presume they'll seek a commitment from you, if in government, for an independent inquiry sooner rather than later. Would you support that request? I don't want to sort of predetermine what you might want to say to them because you might deem that to be disrespectful to them, but I know they listen. Would you support their calls?
Well, look, I will be meeting with a number of the families. I remember when this happened, I remember visiting Chrysler shortly afterwards and just the utter devastation of those days, and of course that lives with the families. It's an unspeakable tragedy, and I know the nation has not forgotten them, and our hearts are still broken for them, and they're looking for answers to their questions. So from the very outset, we had made clear, and my colleagues Piers Doherty and Patrick McLaughlin have raised many, many times on the floor of the Dáil and with government, the need for that mechanism, for clarity, for the truth. I know they had a meeting with government. I think that is encouraging. I know that they felt that they were heard. That is so important. What we need now is to move from a position of not ruling things out to actually ruling something in. So we continue to be supportive of the whatever mechanism is necessary to get to the truth, to get the full facts for those families. I think that is an independent public inquiry.
Are you of the view that an independent inquiry can run alongside the other inquiries? There is some concern that It could interfere with the Garda inquiry. The solicitors for the family are quite
clear
that's not the case.
Yeah,
because there are already three inquiries ongoing at the moment. All right,
that's right.
But maybe an independent inquiry delves into different areas. I don't know. What's your view on that?
Well, it would. I am convinced by the position of those representing the families. Obviously, in crafting this and establishing this, you do have to be mindful of marks of delineation. The Garda inquiry in particular has to be unhampered and has to be thorough and full. But just bear in mind that the passage of time always in these things is an issue. So I think that the sooner you establish your mechanism of inquiry, the better. You can always have a look to the phasing of the work and the rolling out of the programme of work to take account of the need for boundaries. The worst thing that could happen, Greg, is this, is that these families, like so many, many others, I'm thinking of the Stardust families, for example, where similarly lives were lost in profoundly traumatic circumstances. And those families were left literally for generations waiting and waiting. And there is nothing more cruel. Mm-hmm. So I think... you know, there is an issue around timing for the families, for their sense of being heard and being supported, but also in terms of getting the inquiry right. So I look forward to meeting with them and to hearing what they have to say. But yes, we absolutely support in principle the notion of a public inquiry. And I see, and we see no real impediment to establishing it.
We surely can find the mechanisms that we can progress one thing without it interfering.
Precisely.
We're clever people.
Yeah, exactly.
Aren't we?
Exactly.
A lot of questions obviously coming in on defective concrete blocks. That forms part of your meeting here. What will you do to help people who can't afford to avail of the defective concrete block scheme? What are you going to do to help defective concrete block homeowners? And on it goes. You'll hear all of this from people you're meeting a little later on. But there's so much has been promised from Sinn Féin that it would just be unimaginable if in power this weren't delivered, and how it would compound and devastate the families that are already just right on the edge. So just reaffirm maybe your
absolutely.
To
well,
these
let
people.
Me let me just recall. I remember the first time that I met Paddy Diver's home, and I'll be meeting with Paddy again today and Michael Doherty. Michael Doherty and Paddy Diver. And I remember the first time I actually felt the defective block, the mic, actually crumble to powder in my hand. And meeting with other families on that visit and previously, and just the human devastation of your family home literally crumbling around you. I mean, it's absolutely terrifying. I think it's only when you're in a home like that that you fully appreciate the impact on marriages, family relationships, young people doing exams, or, do you know, all of the things, the milestone of a life that all got marred and all got disrupted, if not destroyed, because of this experience. So we have made a commitment to 100% redress. We are bound by that. We will be held to that, and we will deliver that.
So it doesn't matter if he has his 250 grand. It doesn't matter if he has his 1.2 million. End to end, everything covered.
Every person who went about forming and building their home, and I heard the stories, people who had been working in England, you know, families who had been away, their dream was to come home to Donegal. Their dream was to build their home, to raise their families. They worked so hard. They did nothing wrong. They did nothing wrong at all. They followed the rule book. They played by every rule. The fault lay with others. So therefore, no family should be punished. It's 100% redress. We are committed to that. Obviously, let me say this. If Sinn Féin is in government or leading the next government, obviously that means that the 100% redress scheme is home and host. It will be absolutely delivered. Okay. I know others have made commitments, other parties that would aspire to government. Some people might say, well, you know, we lean on that, or, you know, elect a different type of candidate to try and influence that government behaviour. Let me just tell you, frankly, Greg, I have seen government in and government out, promises made to individual or solo candidates that something will be done and something will be delivered. And I have seen those people, good people in many, many instances, strung along and communities left waiting and waiting
just
and waiting.
Just to be clear, is that, and I presume with all respect to anyone that puts the name forward, is that a direct reference to the 100% Redress Party putting forward a candidate?
This is a clear message from me to the people of Donegal, and it is this. If you wish to see 100% redress delivered by a government, I can guarantee you that a government with Sinn Féin, led by Sinn Féin, is delivering 100% redress. There will be no ifs, there will be no buts, and there will be no delay. That is our clear, concise commitment to everybody concerned.
And with all of that, and with all your commitments in there, in housing and education and stuff, right? A lot of the people that text in this show or I speak to out in the street feel that they can't vote for your party now because they don't see you as an alternative on something that seems immediate and easier to fix, i.e., and you referenced it earlier, and I did too, immigration. You know what I mean? Because sometimes the big things like housing and health, they're so big that we can't... But something like
the immediate turnip.
It just feels like, right, if I get your position on that, I know which way I can vote. Whether that's right or wrong, it probably is
Well, look, people, Greg, look at all of these issues and they weigh it up in the balance. I would say, personally, that there is no bigger issue than the issue of housing and the safety of your home. There's no more compelling domestic issue for the happiness of your family and the fulfilment
so
of your life.
Your
but on the issue
on
immigration, let me just say this, that I watched with my colleagues, and we tried to influence government from the beginning as to how to get things right. But sadly, they went ahead and got things wrong. What did they get wrong? They placed vulnerable communities of people into communities that were already struggling just to get by, where resources were stretched. We told them from the get-go that was the wrong approach, and I believe that it is the wrong approach. So the first thing I would say to your listeners is where international protection centres have to be opened, they should be in areas that have the resources and the capacity to actually provide for
them.
There
is nowhere that has
Sorry.
That.
If no,
you
bring I,
in, if you
I disagree.
In schools, GP spaces, well, local acute hospital pressures. My point is, I'm not saying that what I'm saying is accurate, but I am saying anyone in those communities will be able to, no matter where you decide they might go, will be able to, and no one can have a veto, I think you've said that before, would be able to make a concrete argument that that area cannot sustain.
No, well, you
centers.
See, that's only if you imagine if you live in another world whereby every single community has access to exactly the same amount of resources, services and supports. Mm. That's not the Ireland we live in, Greg. It's just not. And people in the Northwest know that only too well. I can tell you people in my own home city, the diversity and the contrast between neighbourhoods and postal codes is just immense. It's like the daylight and the dark. And what the government has consistently done, it seems to me, is to place these centres in the very areas that are struggling, literally, putting it for hand-to-mouth existence. So that needs to stop. Our position is where centres are opened, it has to be in areas that are properly resourced, and there has to be a community consultation. More importantly, though, we have a system of rules. The rules have to be applied. What does that mean? It means where somebody makes an application and qualifies to stay, we support them, we integrate them, we work with them.
In that regard, there's no ceiling on
Well,
that.
No, that's not how the system works.
I know, but I'm just asking a question
sure, no,
someone
no, no.
might ask.
So where you qualify and you stay, that's fine. See where you don't qualify. You have to be safely returned. For too long, the state and the government have relied on what they deem to be a self-return policy. That's crazy. It means that you cannot account for who is here, who has stayed, who has left, including those who haven't qualified for status here. So simple common sense has to prevail here, and it has to be around the application of the rules. And if that happened, you would have a much more rapid, much more efficient system. And you see all of the really burgeoning pressures that lead to people living in tents on our streets and on our canals. It would alleviate that hugely. Can I also say another thing that differentiates us from government? You see, we don't believe that any individuals, a handful of individuals, should get rich or become millionaires on the back of the misery of refugees. But the government has allowed that to happen.
I've been sorry for all the Egypts. that offered their houses for 800 a month were never considered for that because there was too much money to be made elsewhere.
Well, and government, but that didn't happen by accident. Those were decisions made by the current government. Our position is that these centres have to be publicly procured and built. That's the efficient way to do it. It's much less expensive for the taxpayer, and it rules out any kind of profiteering on behalf of individuals. So this is an issue, by the way, if there are people out there, anybody saying to anybody, we are going to make this stop. We are going to close the airports, close the ports and make it stop. That's not good. That's not the real world. In the real world, you have to have a government that has a clear-cut rule book, that has the resources and the capacity
and
to implement those
we
rules
also have to be
efficiently.
Realistic too, like Microsoft's announcement today, some of those jobs, people are going to have to come in to do those jobs. We are not producing enough children in this country at the moment to sustain the population. We are going to, as we already do in certain areas, have to look at migration.
And let's say, what we've been talking about in the first part of our conversation is international protection. It's people looking for international protection, whether people coming from Ukraine. And by the way, the temporary protections for Ukrainian people will come to an end in 2026. We have been consistently saying to government that there has to be a roadmap out of that. You can't be in a perpetual sense of crisis and others. But then there's a whole other stream of people who come here to work. People who work in our hospital and our health system, people who work in the big multinationals,
and they've kind of been caught in this toxicity, unfortunately, and they've been living here for years, and their children are living here.
And final word on it. Therefore, I think we can all agree we need proper management of all of the above, and I hope we can still agree that Ireland remains a friendly, hospitable country, and that racism is repulsive. And when you raise a question about immigration or how it's being managed, that does not make you a racist at all. But for those, that small section of Irish society that is racist, I hope we collectively, the many, actually answer that toxic view back.
Well, yeah, and some would argue it's a very vocal minority, but it's platformed and promoted actually on certain. Listen, thanks very much for that. I mean, obviously, you know, over the course of the next 3 or 4 weeks with the local representatives, we'll be able to dig in a little bit deeper with housing and health and all that type of stuff. But obviously, we just have to touch on as much as we can in the time that allows. And that's all the time that we have. So thank you very much for calling in. I do appreciate
My pleasure,
your
Greg.
Time and enjoy the rest of your stay.
Thank you.
In Donegal. And I'm sure lots of people are very keen to meet you and we don't want to delay that. But for now, thank you.
Thank you so much, Greg. Thank you.